Welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf, the show that lifts the lid on New Zealand's distilling magic. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf, your guide to the flavours, the people and the inspiration behind our top local spirits. We'll hear what drives these distillers to create their signature blends and maybe discover a new favourite along the way. So whether you're a gin lover or a whiskey wizard, join us on the ride and always keep it classy and drink responsibly.
Kia ora and welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf. I'm Susie Carrick and this is the show where we share the stories behind the New Zealand distilleries, the passion, the pivots and the personalities that bring our spirits to life. Today we're travelling to the very top of the South Island, to Golden Bay, tucked between lush bush, sweeping beaches and some of the clearest waters you will ever see. It's a place that feels a little removed from the rush of the world. Perhaps that is exactly why something so special could be created there. I'm talking about Dancing Sands, a distillery many listeners first discovered through their award-winning gin. These days, they're so much more than just a gin brand. Joining me is co-founder Sarah Bonema. Sarah, welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf.
Thank you very much for having me, Susie. It's lovely to be here.
Right. Now, let's start. Before the distillery was even an idea, you and your husband, Ben, were not always in spirits. What were the two of you doing before Dancing Sands, and how did you end up in New Zealand and then all the way in Golden Bay?
That's the great questions. It's quite a long story, but I'll keep it short. Basically, Ben and I met through work. We were both working corporate IT jobs. Ben was in the US, I was in the UK. Long story short, we quit our corporate jobs and decided to move to New Zealand. This was back in 2012, 2013. We landed in Wellington, both got back into the corporate IT sector over there. We loved it. We loved New Zealand. But we'd always thought about starting our own business, something in the food and beverage sector. Mm-hmm. Coming from the UK particularly, gin and spirits, craft spirits was already a pretty big industry over there. And we landed in New Zealand and it was very much still in its early stages. And then Ben found a still for sale on Trade Me, as you do in New Zealand. Our eldest daughter had just been born. She was 10 weeks old. And we thought, what better time than to quit our corporate jobs and move over from Wellington to Golden Bay, buy the still off Trade Me and a couple of tanks and start a spirits brand. But that's what we did.
Wow. So what year was that?
So 2016, we started Dancing Sands. So we're just about to start our 11th year in business.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So Golden Bay is not exactly a casual detour. It's a deliberate destination, traveling over the Takaka Hill, a journey I want to take. What was it about the region that made you think, yes, this is where we will build something?
Yeah. Well, I think you alluded to it in your introduction. It is a stunningly beautiful part of the country. We have the Abel Tasman National Park on one side, the Kaharangi National Park on the other, beautiful golden sandy beaches, amazing water. And we had traveled there pre-finding the still on Trade Me, pre-children. We had traveled there and camped for a couple of weeks and just loved it. It is just, you know, it's just good for the soul. And so then when we found the still and that's where it was, it all just seemed to come together. We were aspired to move to the South Island. We had just loved all of our trips down that way after we first moved to New Zealand. And so it just seemed like the natural step. And in fact, I think it's been a really good decision. You know, the natural beauty of the area really, you know, continues to inform what we do on a daily basis. So it's been a really good fit for us.
Okay. So starting a distillery in a relatively remote location must come with its own unique challenges. In those early days, what were some of the biggest hurdles and what kept you going?
That's a good question. I think The remote location definitely does have its challenges, but most of those we've overcome. You know, we have daily freight in and out. And actually the small community that we're in has been a real bonus because everyone knows everyone. And so when we have an issue or a challenge, let's say the labeling machine breaks down, we can usually find someone locally, you know, someone's brother, uncle, whatever, and get, you know, who might know something or have the right bit of kit that we need and can help us out. So the small community aspect of it has been a real bonus. And I think, you know, the challenges that we had very much, I think, less to do about the location and more just about starting a business. You know, we didn't have a clue what we were doing. We were just a lot of trial and error, a lot of failures in the early days, and a lot of getting things wrong. But that's kind of how we learned and how we evolved. And I think that's, you know, pretty common for most people starting out in the industry.
Yeah, everyone thinks it's alcohol. It's easy.
It's easy. Everyone drinks this. It's really not.
It's a nightmare. Right. So Dancing Sands really established itself as a gin brand and a highly respected one at that. When you first began, was gin always the plan? What drew you into that spirit in particular?
That's a great question. It was always part of the plan, but it wasn't our lead sort of goal. We actually planned to start a rum distillery that also made gin. But very quickly, it became clear that we were going to be a gin distillery that also made rum, because that's what the market very much dictated. Gin was an up-and-coming category. Consumers loved it. It's a very versatile spirit. It's very easy to play around with flavors. And so that lent itself to kind of how we like to work very quickly. And at the time, the rum category, probably, and even still to this day, didn't get the attention and the love from consumers that gin does. And so very quickly the sales dictated which way we were going to go, and we focused, doubled down on gin and doubled down on R&D in that space, and that's kind of led us to where we are today.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about the gins. You have some really bold, expressive characters with botanicals like wasabi and lychee. When you're building a recipe, what leads the way? The botanicals, the place, the season, or the story you want the drinkers to feel?
Yes. I guess the first thing I would say is we always try and make something different that isn't already available on the market. So not really interested in churning out just another
gin.
So with everything, there's always an anchor botanical. The wasabi gin is a great example. We discovered through doing some work with New Zealand King Salmon, who have a hatchery here in Golden Bay, that there was wasabi root, so actual real wasabi rhizome root being grown in the river just down the road from the distillery. And that's sort of then became the idea for a gin. We're like, how do we get a gin using this wasabi rhizome in it? And we built everything else around it. Same thing with our Sauvignon Blanc gin or with the lychee. It's always one anchor botanical and the rest gets built from there. But the key for us is it needs to be different. It needs to be different to in some way be different to whatever else is available already on the market.
Absolutely. I mean, wasabi gin is one of my favorite gins. That and tomato juice.
Oh, so good.
Perfect. Is that breakfast, yeah. Wake-up call, hangover remedy, some would refer it as. Now, a lot of people still think of Dancing Sands, obviously, equals gin. And as we've said, you've grown into so much more than just that. At what point did you realize that yes, gin was first, but you wanted to become more than just gin? And when did you release the rum?
Yeah, so we had made rum from day one, but very quickly had to put that to one side. And it got to, it was during the COVID years as the business was really growing very fast, and we knew that we wanted to expand back into other categories, but we just didn't have the capacity to do so. And that's when we decided to invest in a new and much bigger still than the one we had. So we started out on 150 litre Jacob Carl copper still. And in 2021, we installed Florence, our 700 litre hybrid still. And that has basically just reopened all the doors. We suddenly had capacity to be able to make rum, make vodka, look at liqueurs. We're able to contract distill. And so from there, it became about building the range out into other categories that we'd long wanted to play in, but not been able to do so because we just couldn't keep up with production.
Yeah. Especially in those COVID days.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us a little bit more what you have branched out into and some of the flavors that are a little bit more interesting and might be a surprise for those who only know you as gin.
Yeah, so I guess the two main areas we've branched back into has been rum and vodka. And in both those spaces, we've tried to focus on flavors. We do have two aged rum SKUs one of which we made entirely ourselves. We put that rum down in 2016 and just left it to age for years, and we started bottling that a couple of years ago. But in the flavor space, key thing for us is always using real ingredients, nothing artificial, no stabilizers, no coloring. It's only ever going to have real ingredients. And so we have created things like a feijoa and a grapefruit and pineapple vodka made entirely from fruit. So just using kilos and kilos of fruit in each batch. And then also a flavored rum. So a coconut and vanilla rum and a salted caramel rum liqueur. We make the salted caramel ourselves on the stove in the distillery. It's like real caramel that our distiller Corey makes, and then we blend that through the rum, and those flavors have proved pretty popular with our customers in the cellar door and online since we launched them.
Wow, yeah, they just sound absolutely very delicious.
Tasty.
Very much so. Okay, so when you move into a new category, whether it's a different base spirit, a liqueur, or something a bit left field, what is the test? How do you know that this is ready to carry the Dancing Sands name?
So there's really two things we look at. Do we see a gap in the market? Do we think there's a space on the shelf for a new product? And that would be the key test that we do if we're going to launch something kind of nationwide. Put it into liquor stores across the country. Sometimes, though, we just want to have a bit of fun and try something new. A good example would be we started making a limoncello last year. It's something we've only made in small quantities. It's something that's only available to our customers who come to us directly. And that was really just that we had someone locally in the Bay who had loads of lemons that she needed to get rid of. We're like, well, let's have a go at limoncello. That sounds like fun. And it's actually turned into something that when we don't have it in stock, that people come looking for and asking us when it's going to be back. So it can be a bit of both. It can be strategic, or it can just be, let's have a go.
Okay. It's always some these great stories and leftover fruit.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, you've built an export presence from what many would consider a far-flung corner of New Zealand. As an expat, do you think that international perspective gives you an advantage in the industry, especially when it comes to export overseas markets and building global relationships?
That's a really good question. I think my time overseas, particularly, I mean, pre coming to New Zealand, I worked for a large multinational company and used to work, you know, in locations all around the world. And so I got to work with people from all different backgrounds and countries. And that really helped me learn how to work, with different cultures or different ways of doing things. So I think that has definitely been an advantage in terms of the relationship side of things. I wouldn't say that sort of once you've got the brand in the door in an expat market, I mean, that's really when the work begins. And I think there's no real substitute, because what we found is that every export market is different. You think that it's going to be just like launching it in New Zealand, and it's often not. The way that that market operates might be different. The structure, you know, the retail structure might be different. The products that they like are often different. So we found, for example, that certain SKUs do better in export markets than they do here in New Zealand, and vice versa. And that's just been, again, a lot of trial and error and just figuring out what works.
Yeah, isn't it amazing how the different markets, I know different regions around New Zealand, you can have gin festivals, the same distillery can go to different gin festivals all around the country, and your number one gin will be a different one.
Exactly, yeah.
I know that exporting spirits is highly challenging. So when you see Dancing Sands being poured overseas, what does it feel like knowing that it started its life in Golden Bay?
Oh, I mean, it's amazing. I'm not going to lie. I think the key one for me was when we launched into the UK, and then going back home to visit family and going into stores and seeing the product that we've made on the shelf over there. There's just nothing like it. There's a huge sense of achievement. And then being able to bring a little bit of our story and our part of New Zealand to those markets has been wonderful. I think it's, whilst export markets can be, well, they are hugely challenging. And everyone thinks, woohoo, you're exporting, you've made it. But it's actually really difficult. And it's a lot of work to make it successful in an export market. But for me, yeah, seeing our products on the shelf overseas, or if we get sent photos of people who've bought stuff and, you know, in a, I don't know, a liquor store in the US, and then sent us a photo of them enjoying it at home, it's an amazing feeling. It really is.
Yeah, I can imagine. Okay, so looking ahead, what is lighting you up right now? Is it a new spirit, a new flavor, a new market, or something you're quietly experimenting behind the scenes?
Yeah, we're actually having a lot of fun at the moment. We are in the middle of some product development work. We are playing around with some new and interesting botanicals. I'm not going to give too much away, but we are looking at sort of potentially launching one or two new flavors in the near future, and it's just a heap of fun, this process, lots of experimenting. We start on a very small still, and we have a 20 liter R&D still that we play around with, so there's lots of just testing and this works, that doesn't, I'm hoping within the next probably couple of months we'll have something that is ready to move forward into production.
Ooh, exciting times. Right, now, final question and my favourite question. It's the end of the working week. The emails are done. The distillery is quiet and you have some moment to yourself. What is your go-to Dancing Sands drink and how do you enjoy it?
That is a great question. My go-to changes throughout the year. So depending on the season, I go to different gins. But at the moment, my favorite is a sun-kissed mule. So our sun-kissed is a strawberry and rhubarb gin made with real strawberries and rhubarb. And I love to mix it in a mule with a little bit of Aperol, some fresh lime juice, and some ginger ale or ginger beer. And that is just a really lip-smackingly refreshing way to hit 6 p.m. on a Friday and wind down for the weekend.
That does sound amazing. Right, Sarah, thank you so much for sharing your story, not just the spirits, but the journey that brought you and Ben to New Zealand and then to Golden Bay to build something that has become such a distinctive part of our spirit landscape. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Susie.
Right, so if you would like to learn more about Dancing Sands, explore their range and discover more New Zealand distilleries doing incredible things, head to nzspiritguide.com. Until next time, support local, buy direct, drink responsibly and keep your top shelf full of stories.
That's a wrap on this episode of Tales from the Top Shelf. We hope you've enjoyed this peek into the craft and creativity behind New Zealand's distilling scene. As always, sip slow, enjoy responsibly, and don't forget to support our incredible local spirit makers. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf. Catch you next time for more Behind the Bar stories.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.